All right. Well, welcome everybody to another LinkedIn Live podcast here from Capital Tech. I'm Brad Sims. I'm the president of Capital Technology University. And today we have Andre Mendez. He is the chief information officer at the U.S. Department of Commerce. And he's also chair of the board of trustees for Capital Technology University. So we're very happy to have him here today as well. And before we start, real quick, just wanted to highlight Capital Tech has a long history. It started in Washington, D.C. in 1927 by a Navy vet who retired and wanted to teach other people how to build radios. And over the years, Capital Tech moved north to Laurel, Maryland, where we sit today. So Mr. Mendez is obviously close in location that he participates with our board of trustees on a regular basis here at Capital Tech. But welcome, and let's start off by just letting everybody know kind of about your history. How did you end up becoming the chief information officer at the Department of Commerce?
Very good. Well, you know, it's a long history. I'll take it way back, but make it short, despite that it covers a long period of time. So I immigrated to the United States in 1979 from my native Portugal, and so I've been here for about 44 years. And throughout that time, I have had the fortune, the good fortune of learning a lot and then moving from job to job, from you know, being a dishwasher as my first job, waiting tables, doing construction, you name it. But eventually getting a technical degree in computer science and getting my first job. You know, I went through just about every job you can think of in IT, from the help desk to junior programmer, to senior programmer, to programmer analyst, to manager of programmers, to director of information systems, and eventually to a CIO position at PBS in 1998. And it has been a complete roller coaster of great projects and constant flux of technology that has enabled me to grow in my job. Specifically with the Department of Commerce, I came via one of the bureaus, the International Trade Administration, that hired me in April of 2018 after I had finished a stint of 10 years at my first government agency. It used to be called the Broadcasting Board of Governors. Now it's called the United States Agency for Global Media, and is the agency that, that does all of the broadcasts, the civilian broadcasts all over the world, covering over 100 countries in 63 languages. So when I started at ITA, there was already a fairly robust effort to move to the cloud. At previous age, 90% in the cloud by 2014, which was leading the government. And because I felt that that from the moment I got there, it was a perfect scenario for cloud deployment. And then at ITA, we became the first bureau/agency that was 100% cloud-based in 2018. I think my efforts caught the attention of the leadership at the Department of Commerce, and eventually they offered me the job at the department, leading not only ITA and the department, but all of the other bureaus that encompass some of the best known organizations in the federal government, like NOAA, from which you get the weather in the National Weather Service, the United States Patent and Trade Office, the Office of the Census, the Census Bureau, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, which basically defines standards for the entire world because everybody follows our example, and a lot of other different smaller bureaus that have a vast panoply of missions, but that are altogether basically charged with increasing commerce, both within the United States and internationally. So I've been here for 3.5 years, which makes me the longest tenured CIO at the Department of Commerce. And I've just been having an absolute blast, moving all the bureaus in unison into a fast moving world of cloud and artificial intelligence. And all of the other great things that are coming into the technology realm.
Well, 3.5 years being the longest CIO there, what would be kind of like your regular duties every day that you go to work and you know you have to do on a, or is it different, or is it kind of the same thing every day?
Every day, today has the opportunity to be a surprise. It might not surprise anybody that we are under constant withering attack from organizations from all over the world from a cybersecurity standpoint. We have a very preeminent role in international trade when it comes to tariffs and all of the issues associated with, for example, chips production. And so we are sort of, to a certain degree, the envy of a lot of regimes that are interested in getting our information and causing us harm. And so under constant withering attack, I mean, literally millions and millions of attempts on a monthly basis. And so every day can be quite interesting. But there's also other, other more leisurely activities, like dealing with the budget and preparing budgets for both the current year and the next year. Altogether, the IT budget at Department of Commerce is approximately $3.8 billion. So it's very significant. If you don't work in the federal government, you might not know, but at any point in time, we are dealing with the current fiscal year. So at this particular point in time, it should be fiscal year 24, but we're in a continuing resolution. The next fiscal year, fiscal year 25, for which we've already prepared and submitted a budget to Congress. And now we start the preparation for fiscal year 26. And of course, there is an enormous amount of work to be done in that in terms of figuring out which projects we need to discontinue, which projects are coming to a conclusion and are moving from development into operations and maintenance, and which projects are deserving of asking new funding from Congress in order to move forward. And so it is a constant churn. There's a lot of oversight and regulatory requirements, such as FISMA and FITARA. We're constantly doing portfolio evaluations of all of our applications, which number in the hundreds, to make sure that they're performing appropriately and that they're moving forward at the pace that we want them to move in. And of course, there's always the hiring and performance management of the workforce, about 14,000 people that need to be managed and assessed and encouraged and nurtured and loved. And so it never stops. It never stops. It's a constant churn, and we're very busy all of the time. So any of these thoughts that you might entertain that working in IT for the Department of Commerce is leisurely, please dispel them, because it's not true.
Well, then that leads into what does it take to work for you at the Department of Commerce? What kind of employees are you looking for? What kind of experience or background, or who can apply there? That I mean, I would imagine you have a few job openings as well.
Always. So I will tell you this: my stance on that is somewhat different than the average CIO in the government. But I will tell you why. A lot of people are interested, and in the private sector, a lot of people are interested in acquiring and hiring people that have a lot of experience on the subject matter that they are dealing with. So if you're an engineering firm, you want IT people that have engineering experience. If you are in, let's say, pharmaceuticals, people are out there looking for people who have pharmaceutical industry experience. I absolutely do not believe in that model. I believe that what you do is you hire very smart, very ignorant about the subject matter people, and iconoclasts, people who are willing to take risks, people who understand vision, people who can dream big, in terms of what the art of the possible is. And a lot of times when you hire somebody, for example, in pharmaceuticals, that has been in pharmaceuticals for 30 years, they are so in the process that they've learned over 30 years that it's very hard for them to think outside the box in terms of deploying innovation, which is constant, right? And so when you look at those people, you bring them in, yes, they hit the ground running, but then you see incremental gains. We are in an environment where incremental gains are not going to get you where you need to be. You need transformative gains. You need innovative gains, sometimes industry-changing gains that take you from being an also-ran organization to being a leader in the industry. And so those are the kind of people that that I would love to hire on a constant basis. Really smart, really ignorant, and iconoclastic.
Excellent. So along with your employees, I mean, you participate as our chair of our board of trustees at Capital Technology University. What is your view of higher education degrees and the value of higher education?
Well, without a shadow of a doubt, higher education opens doors for you that will otherwise remain closed. I actually got a degree very late in life because I started working and fortunately was very successful without a degree until I got to the point where I was competing with other CIOs for CIO positions. And it became obvious that not only did I need an undergraduate degree, but even without an MBA or a master's degree, I couldn't get anywhere. I might be the best qualified, candidate, and with the best knowledge and the best ability to move things forward. But organizations are not willing to take risks on people that do not have those degrees, right? Because they are accountable to the board of directors. And if, of course, there's always a possibility you hire somebody and something goes not very well. And then if it comes out that that person that you hired does not have a degree, does not have an advanced degree, when the other candidates all did, then it becomes a problem for the board, becomes a problem for the management, and therefore they're not very willing to take that risk. Now, that's not true everywhere. Companies that are more modern, that are more innovative, that are in the space that understands that innovation trumps everything, are willing to take those risks. But we also know that the overwhelming majority of companies do not operate that way. So a degree is something that is absolutely important, and advanced degrees are extremely important because they're differentiators from the rest. Now, if you think that you're going to get a degree because you're going to learn something and that will serve you well for the rest of your life, then you're sadly mistaken. You earn a degree because you want the credentials, but life is a degree on a constant basis. So once you have those credentials, you cannot stop. You cannot stand on your laurels of your master's degree. You have to constantly learn because the world changes so fast, especially in technology, that 5 years from now, what you've learned in that degree is not necessarily relevant, except that you learned how to learn. You learned how to synthesize information. You learn how to be succinct. You learn how to do research. And those are the things that are going to propel you forward. Let me give you an example. ChatGPT entered into the fray less than a year ago. It was not part, generative AI was not part of anybody's strategic plan a year ago. Today is part of everybody's strategic plan going forward, period. It has to be, right? And guess what? It's going to be replaced by another thing. And so the agility, the ability to learn, to adapt to new circumstances, to understand the underpinnings of technology, how fast they move, and how adaptive you have to be, are absolutely essential. And college and advanced degrees prepare you for that understanding of the speed of technology and how important it is for constant learning to always be at the table.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, even if we scale it on time, right? What has occurred not only between 1901 to 1999, to even what's occurred between 2000, where we were afraid that what was going to happen overnight in 1999 that never happened, right, to now. It's just amazing. So the technology, as you said, it just is. You have to be able to adapt mostly.
And quite honestly, Brett, it's one of the reasons why I was attracted by Capital Technology University and why I think it's such an important resource. A lot of universities and colleges of higher education have a curriculum that, although it's changing faster than it ever did, is still relatively staid. At Capital Technology, what I found is that we are constantly introduced in new fields of study with new specializations that are exactly what the marketplace needs and that you don't find anywhere else. And that to me is, prima facie evidence that that type of strategy really pays off for our students, because they can come to the table with a degree in something that absolutely resonates with the hiring managers, because it is very, very coincidental and overlaps with the latest and greatest technologies that are out there and that people want to leverage, right? And so that's the reasons why we don't have, you know, managers of information systems anymore, right? We have CIOs, and why we have now all kinds of expertise in human engineering, in the merger between the life sciences and information technology. For example, you know, IT in pharmaceuticals, IT in the biological realms, you know, artificial intelligence, propulsion systems, you know, aeronautics, you know, satellites, you name it, rocketry, because that is the way that the world is going. And so the old degrees from 15 years ago are not nearly as relevant unless you kept learning and learning and learning in your daily work and your daily life to supplement what you've learned.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. You know, one thing that I'm proud that we did at Capital Tech starting back in 2017 was addressing critical infrastructure issues. And the way that I viewed it was obviously maybe it wasn't from an IT perspective. I was viewing it from industrial facility perspective of an attack on your industrial control systems, operational technology, which I think is a much bigger risk because of the cascading effect that if a foreign government can take out, it could be wastewater treatment facilities, it could be refineries, it could be manufacturing through an attack like that, the cascading effects down the line that affects every American in multiple segments is tremendous. And it's just an unseen thing that most people in the general population don't see something like an industrial control system and an operational technology attack through cyber from somebody who doesn't have to physically be here because, you know, 30, 40 years ago, we worried about physical attacks where somebody would throw something that could be explosive in one of these facilities. Not anymore. So I'm proud that, you know, we were addressing issues like that back in 2017 before what we see on current news is out there, that something simple like Colonial Pipeline, but that's not exactly an ICS attack, but it's still in the vein of where we could have dangerous effects of cascading effects to affect all of our lives, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. SCADA systems, as they are called, right, are absolutely important to the maintenance of our lifestyle, you know, and so they are prime targets. And historically, they have not been as well protected because they were not as automated as they are. But nowadays, with intelligent grids, with a desire to optimize distribution, you have to have that level of control that can only be brought about by information technology systems. And so there are those vulnerabilities that absolutely must be addressed and that you cannot ignore. So that is a huge area right now for the federal government, as you can imagine, because it's extremely dangerous. And on the other side of the equation, we also leverage it ourselves, right? You might have heard of a little, you know, episode called Stuxnet back in the early part of the century, where we were able to infiltrate systems that were actually completely disconnected from the internet. They were air-gapped, but nevertheless relied on computers and programming inside of centrifuges at an Iranian, you know, nuclear material refinement. And we were able to get into those systems. And when I say we, it's the royal we, you know, it's people outside of that realm, and effectively make the centrifuges spin at a higher speed than it was supposed to spin, and destroy their mechanisms, while the displays in the front that are controlled by computers showed the usual RPM that you'd expect in normal operations. So, but you know, it is a war, and make no mistake, you know, cybersecurity is today a war with a battlefield that is in the virtual realm, and that evolves very, very rapidly.
Exactly. Well, we have a few questions. I'm going to pull them up so we can take a look at those.
Sounds good. I'll have to answer them.
All right. Let's see. First one is from our own graduate, Dr. Mora. He was wondering, number one, how is the $1 billion state and local cybersecurity grant program coming along? And part two, what's next with NIST and CISA?
Ah, okay. Well, the grants programs are going very well. are going very well. As a matter of fact, I can tell you, first news here. We have just, at the beginning of the fiscal year, started the migration from 29 different systems at Department of Commerce into one unified system for grants management, which will be cloud-based software as a service, which will be a major, major advancement for all of the bureaus. And so far, knock on wood, it's going very well. And we expect that by the end of October, we'll be fully launched with a new environment that is much, much better. NIST is an absolutely fascinating organization because not only does it come up with all the standards for technology that are used all over the world, but it has a cadre of scientists on a variety of topics that are absolutely top-notch. And so they're spending a substantial amount of time right now in artificial intelligence, in quantum computing, and also in ethics, right? Looking at all of the potential standards that need to be established so that these technologies can be used both effectively, but also securely and also ethically. So very, very interesting. CISA, is actually part of the Department of Homeland Security. And it is an organization that is putting forth major efforts in the cybersecurity arena. I would highlight one that is very, very important. It is called a CDM, Constant Detection and Monitoring, that actually looks at the endpoints for just about every government agency, so every computer and laptop out there, and is constantly on the prowl for signs of infection, interfacing with the EDRs, the endpoint detection and response systems, so that they have a handle on the new items that show up in the wild for exploring vulnerabilities, so that they can be contained and then targeted for disposal. Very, very interesting organization that has an enormous task in its hands, but that has performed very, very well, specifically in the areas of IT. And cybersecurity. So thank you for the question. Very much appreciate it. And good luck with your degree at Capital Technology.
Oh, he's a graduate. He's done 2 degrees from us.
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. Well, congratulations, sir or ma'am. I don't know which one it is. But congratulations, and I hope that they aid you tremendously in your career and that they continue to bear fruits for you as you continue to learn and grow.
Yes. Let's see. Next question we have is from Shane Black. What are the biggest cyber initiatives for the Department of Commerce in FY24?
So without a shadow of a doubt, our whole of commerce strategy for migrating to a zero trust architecture. We are quite unique in that in the federal sector because we have decided to take a whole of commerce approach where we brought in all the best and brightest in the cybersecurity arena at the entire set of bureaus into a working group, our ZTA working group, and then separate working groups for different areas of ZTA. And together they came up with an architecture that we are now pursuing, purchasing and deploying. We've already selected 3 of the components. I can tell you about 2 because it's already public knowledge. We selected Sentinel-1 for EDR. And by the way, this does not constitute an endorsement. I'm just telling you what we did, right? I can't endorse products. But we selected Sentinel-1, and that's being deployed throughout the bureaus and all of our endpoints. We've selected Okta for our ICAM strategy for identity and access control. And that's also going through its deployment. And we now selected a SASE provider for controlling the edge that I am very excited about. I can't tell you yet because it has not been announced, but it's going to revolutionize the way we do business, with our employees all over the world and dramatically increase our cybersecurity posture and hopefully dramatically decrease our cybersecurity exposures. So ZTA is very, very much front and center. And fiscal year 24 will be absolutely a watershed year in terms of our ability to deploy it and to continue to expand it. Thank you for your question. Appreciate it.
So that's it for questions at the moment. We only have a few minutes. since we keep this lives to 30 minutes or less. But thinking about that, so we got about 5 minutes left. Is there anything that we haven't covered that, you know, you'd like to talk about, especially from Department of Commerce perspective, that the viewers would be interested in hearing about?
Sure. So let's see. First and foremost, it is important that anybody in technology, whether you're a student or a practitioner, understand that technology is about the business. Technology is about people. And that leadership is about managing change, right? Just about anybody, quite honestly, can manage an environment that is static and that is operating well, right? Then it becomes an exercise in operational discipline, which is important, right? And in regulatory compliance and constant observation and reporting on the metrics of the system. Leadership is a different ballgame. Leadership is about taking the organization to the next level through innovation. And with it comes a very heavy dollop of people management. Because change management is the hardest part of technological implementation. Nowadays, when you, let's say you hire a contractor to move you to a new financial system, right? That contractor is going to have access to some of the best and brightest in that technology. They are going to have a process that has been vetted over many, many projects and that can be brought to the table to facilitate the technical changes and the technical migration. But then you have the change management. And let me explain why that's so important, at least in my view. People that have been working with applications for a long time, 15, 20, 25 years, not unusual in any industry, and certainly not in the federal government, right? They develop an affinity for the applications they are experts in, right? Because a lot of times they provide them with the professional identity of who they are. Let's say that you are particularly expert in a financial Oracle-based system that your organization has been deploying for the past 20 years. Well, a lot of your ego and persona is based on the fact that you know the system like the that you can answer questions, from people that are not as versed as you. That you can solve problems by understanding potential workarounds because you have an in-depth knowledge of data structures, processes, and workflows. And so it becomes very much a part of your identity that you're an expert in this system. All of a sudden, out comes the CIO or IT and the leadership and say, we're going to migrate to a new system that's going to be cloud-based, software as a service, and that we're going to do that in the next 18 months. And you think to yourself, oh my goodness, I'm gonna have to learn something new. And so, you know, it's normal. Fears about change come to the table. And you're afraid that your expertise that was so valuable and such an integral part of you, all of a sudden it becomes less useful after the migration is completed. And you have to learn the new system along with everybody else. So you go from being an expert to being a novice. And a lot of people have a very hard time with that, right? And so nurturing those people alone and understand that in a way they are grieving the old application, right? And you know, when you're grieving, you go through the five stages of grief, right? Including denial at first, oh, this will never happen. And then, you know, anger and depression and negotiation and final acceptance. You need to understand these levels through which people go, these phases through which people go, so that you can help them cope with it with human understanding, with human empathy, and with the knowledge of anthropology that the changes that they're going through are very real, they're not in their head, and it's not that they're just risk averse, is that there is a fundamental change in the way that they perceive themselves at work and are going to do so in the future. And so a good leader, a good manager, a good CIO understands that and nurtures people along and also informs the senior leadership of the organization that this is what's going to happen. And when you go through the different phases, you can identify them for the leadership and say, we are going through the anger phase right now. We are going through the negotiation phase right now. We are going through the acceptance phase right now, so that they understand, for example, when they get complaints, the motivation for the individuals that are complaining, the reason behind it from a psychological standpoint, and they can help you navigate those shoals with them and at the end of the day, bring everybody safely onto the shore and start to enjoy the new system and reach new levels of functionality. Okay? And I have 5 seconds, so I'd like to thank Brad for giving me this opportunity, and I thank you all that assisted for your time.
Well, I just want to bring up one comment that just came in. I think you'll find interesting, and then we'll end the show. So Mr. Carlos Sanchez, he's at the NIH, said they adopted Sentinel-1 and they'd like to trade notes with you. So I would say that, Carlos, if you reach out to either me or Andre via LinkedIn, we will get you his email so you can connect with him.
Absolutely. My background is biology and genetics, so NIH is right up my alley. So let's talk.
There you go. Well, I'd like to thank everybody for attending our Capital Tech LinkedIn Live. And take care, and we'll see you on the other side.
Thank you. Thank you, Brad. Take care, everybody.